TheDonaldTrumpShow.com. Still cannot get over the Donald Trump statement. Just can't get over it. But again, who would hire him? Who would bring him in to do a commencement speech? But this is brilliant advice, and maybe something he should listen to.
Never, ever give up. Don't give up. Don't allow it to happen. If there's a concrete wall in front of you, go through it, go over it, go around it. But get to the other side of that wall.
Yep, get to the other side of the wall. Even if someone builds a big, beautiful wall, get to the other side of it. Now, last night, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, our press secretary, tweeted out that Nancy Pelosi says border security is immoral. There is absolutely nothing immoral about protecting women and children from rape and murder by gangs like MS-13. It is the duty and moral obligation of our president to defend our borders and keep America safe. No one is at all saying we shouldn't be defending our borders and talking about border security. What we're saying is this wall is idiotic. I'm here to share some thoughts on not just the idiotic wall, but also this ridiculous shutdown. And, well, the big news of the day, Michael Cohen. I've asked our good friend Brett Pransky to come talk with us, writer, professor, and, well, office candidate. Brett, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So what do you think? Build the wall, go around it, over it, through it. What have you got to do, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think that one thing that the American people are getting wise to really fast is that the argument about the wall really isn't about the wall. It's really about Donald Trump and whether or not he can or cannot push through his agenda. I mean, because if you remember, you go all the way back to the beginning of this, we had a spending bill come through the House, passed the Senate, I think almost unanimously.
Yep.
And keep in mind, neither of those two things even begins unless Trump says he'll sign it. So his agreement to sign this package was the reason why it was created in the first place. And then when it comes back to him, he scuttles the whole thing because he listened to a little too much right-wing talk radio and got frightened.
Yeah. No, as I said the other day, I go, they took power in January of 2017. They could have done it in January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August, all the way through 17 and all the way through 18. Now that the Democrats have taken over the House, now that the Mueller probe is finding its way towards hopefully a conclusion, it seems that now it's a crisis. Now it's an emergency. But for the past 2 years, not so much.
Yeah. And that's something that we really should be talking about a little bit more is, we've all become pretty aware of this administration's ability to distract. And how they will create stories, even negative stories, as long as it keeps people from talking about things that the administration doesn't want to talk about. The Mueller investigation is getting very close and is getting very scary for the administration. You can see it on an everyday basis. People are walking away. They're jumping ship. They're getting out of town. While the getting is good. And that is something that the administration is really scared of. Now, do I think that Trump created this border crisis just so we would stop talking about it? I don't know if that's exactly the case, but it's certainly a benefit that he's getting from it, that he doesn't mind that as much as he seems to say, he minds that it's going on this long.
Yeah, look, it's a distraction. I think he's doing everything he can do to distract from the Mueller investigation. But also, I think this is also a temper tantrum over November. Because, look, November was about him. He said it was about him. The American people handed the House over to Democrats and said, it really is, Donald. It's about you. And we're not happy.
Yeah, and that's what the 2018 elections were about, essentially. They were about him. And while, we won 40 seats in the House, and it was a really big deal. When you look at the percentage of the vote, had the districts not been gerrymandered the way they currently are, we would have won a lot more than 40 seats. We probably would have broken some records. So, it's just one of those things where he is constantly, just trying to make sure that all the attention is focused on him at every moment. And now with the base support kind of slipping because of some of the other craziness that's going on, it doesn't surprise me that he goes back to the immigration issue, as kind of like his comfort zone and where he can go to really stir up his base.
Well, I mean, I think Alexandria Cortez said it best, he's a racist. I mean, what do you expect?
Yeah, we're real, you know, everyone is very careful with that particular word because it is such, you know, it's one of those things you can't take it back. When that word comes out of your mouth, you can't grab it out of the air and shove it back in.
Right.
So everyone is very careful with that word, and they don't say it unless they really mean it. And she just seems to be saying what most of us are kind of thinking. Well, yeah, it does pretty much explain everything.
Yeah, when you hang around with white nationalists and white supremacists, my mother always told me as a kid, you're judged by who you hang out with. Look who he hangs out with. He hangs out with white supremacists and Russians. So not surprising.
Yeah. And when you consider, I mean, because you look at the wall in particular and what he's doing, there's a couple of things that aren't getting a whole lot of attention. One is what a wall would actually do if he got it. Some of the issues, everything from eminent domain to the environmental issues to the property loss of, you know, from people around the border. Texans don't even want it. You know, the largest section of the wall would be in Texas. Texans don't want it. And they never have. It's always been an issue that the people along the border, you know, do not want the wall. So if the people who live there don't want it, why would you force it on them from up on high? And, you know, keep in mind, we just had an election in Texas for Senate that was much closer than it probably should have been given Texas's history. You know, you want to put Texas in play in 2020, you keep pushing this. Get a charismatic candidate, you know, from Texas who almost beat Ted Cruz, did a really good job, has everybody all fired up. Then you force a wall on the people that they don't want. And you watch what happens to Texas in 2020. It's not out of the realm of possibility that we could flip Texas blue.
Yeah, and you throw that on top of, you know, I'm predicting Florida is going to be a blue state in 2020. It could be a rough road to hoe for Republicans.
Right, right. It's definitely going to be an interesting 2020 map is really looking like, you know, almost like 2018 was just kind of the training wheels for what we can really do. And we did some amazing things in 2018, but 2020 is shaping up. We make some good choices and put some good people up, you know, up for election. And this country is going to change in pretty dramatic ways.
Right. And for those who don't know, the reason that I've chosen Florida as a blue state for 2020 is they just restored the rights of, you know, somewhat 1.5 million people who were convicted of felonies. They have now the right to vote as of Tuesday. So I assume the vast majority of those folks will be voting for Democrats as they go to the polls. So I think that could be a huge game changer in that state. But, you know, I want to move to today because you brought up the people of Texas don't want it. You know, Trump was down in McAllen, Texas today, of which the mayor of that community doesn't want the wall. And as you pointed out, none of the people on the border seem to either. In fact, there's not one congressional representative of any of those areas that has supported it. But, you know, today, you know, he came out and he had a whole big display of drugs and guns and fear and smear and all of that. And what I took away from it was we've got problems at our legal points of entry. You know, the points where the wall would stop things, you know, there wasn't an awful lot there. But there were pounds of drugs and all kinds of stuff that come through our legal points of entry.
Right. But that's, you know, that's what you do if you're stuck in this position. You know, like Donald Trump is, pretty much the only bullet you have in your gun is fear. You know, fear bypasses reason. You know, if I want you to jump and I want you to move and I want you to do what I want you to do, easiest way to do it is to scare you into doing it. So that's what all that is. Look at all this crime. Look at all this scary stuff. Look how scary this is. If you don't want it to get scarier, you better do what I want because I'm the only one who can help you. Pretty common tool. You know, and it's not an exclusive tool of the right. You know, everybody can come along and, you know, and use fear or overuse fear or use it irresponsibly or something like that. But with this administration, it's been just fear on a loop, just over and over and over. I mean, they want me to think that there is, a Mexican criminal sitting in the bushes right outside my window, you know, which just isn't true. And so, you know, the idea that they're ramping it up to this degree to fire people up like this, it means he's desperate.
Yeah, and I can't imagine if he's not impeached or resigned or something, and he does make it to the 2020 election, I can't imagine how much fear and smear will come in that era. Now, one of the things that I was expecting in the speech that the president gave was a declaration of a national emergency, and I still expect it to come. Were you surprised that he didn't go there yet?
I was. I thought that's what the address was about. You know, the idea that he would have that national audience like that and really just play a rerun of the 2016 campaign, because really there's no new information in that entire address. I really thought that was going to be when he was going to declare that national emergency, which is something that has a lot of possible repercussions that are pretty scary. The powers that are granted to a president when he declares a national emergency, some of these things are pretty spooky. Yeah. Doesn't mean they're going to happen, but the possibility of them is something that we really shouldn't ignore, given the extremes that this administration has been willing to go to so far.
Yeah, that kind of a consolidation of power. I thought Anna Navarro had the best response, which was, I want my 9 minutes back.
So, yeah, I lost a few brain cells during that address. Although I have to admit, I watched maybe the first 30 seconds and turned it off on purpose. I was part of the kind of the boycott movement. So if you're looking to affect the ratings, just not watching isn't good enough. You actually have to turn on the program and then switch it off while the program is on. That's how they register the drop in the dials. So that's what I did. So you know, I watched the first few minutes and then changed the channel.
That's got to be infuriating that Chuck and Nancy got higher ratings than he. I was expecting a Twitter storm. It didn't happen yet.
Oh, he felt it. I guarantee that. That's not the kind of thing he ignores. That is the kind of information that would just drive him nuts.
Let's get to the shutdown. We're now heading towards the first Payless payday. There have been reports here recently that, the last shutdown, 2013, people still haven't been paid. They had to fight for it. And I understand, people there are going to probably get, pennies on the dollar, minimum wage instead of their normal paycheck. Today, I believe the Senate passed a piece of legislation to ensure that these furloughed workers will get pay at the end of this. Which I think is a step in the right direction. If we're going to continue to do these nonsensical things, I think if you work, you should get paid. It's that simple. But I'm curious, right, your thoughts. To me, I just think this is the most idiotic thing over.
And it truly is. One thing you cannot do, especially when you're in a position where you need folks to support you or like you or favor your decisions, and the last thing you can do is not pay them. And there's other things to consider as well. Keep in mind that while it seems like we're gonna pay back pay to some of these folks who lost out on or who are losing out on their pay currently, the contractors and people like that, people who aren't actually federal workers but work for these agencies as contractors and outside folks, these people are not going to get paid. And there's a lot of those people. There's a lot of people on that list of furloughed and people who are out of work right now who aren't going to be getting that back pay. Now, and that brings up an even bigger issue, because have you seen all these stories of people who are struggling because they can't make their bills or they can't pay for their medications and all this? Keep in mind, these are people who are losing one paycheck.
Yep.
So you can take a larger, when you take a little larger lens view of the situation, when that many people are in this kind of crisis situation over a single paycheck, maybe the working class and the middle class is not what we think it is, or at least it's certainly not what it used to be. So many people are living paycheck to paycheck that in these circumstances, the idea of those folks missing a paycheck, this isn't just an inconvenience. I mean, this is life and death for some folks.
No, and this is, again, I think out of this, once this is over, I think that's got to be the messaging. I mean, we've seen the studies. There was just one done, I guess, a couple of months ago that said, 40% of the country can't afford a $400 emergency and 60% can't afford a $1,000 emergency. And you go, that's just shocking when you think about we're the wealthiest country in the history of civilization at its wealthiest point. And yet you've got that kind of desperation.
Which is why, so you're seeing some of these responses. For example, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is getting so much attention on the right these days, proposed that 70% top marginal tax rate. This is one of the reasons why you're starting to see these kinds of things, because of that imbalance, because just how out of whack it is that we are now going to some of these things. And hopefully, they say that Republicans want to take everything back to 1950. This is a part of 1950 I wouldn't mind bringing back.
No, I'm right there with you. And, this is something that, almost every Every program I've ever done in the last 14 years is something that I've talked about, the imbalance in our tax code and the inequality. And, you know, the Reagan Revolution was all about, you know, destroying the tax code. When he took office, people are shocked at this, but when he took office, the top marginal tax rate was 70%. You know, right. Anyone making at the time, I think it was like $160,000 or $260,000, which would be like $660,000 in today's dollars. That dollar over $660,000 was taxed at 70%.
Right. And that's something that a lot of people don't understand. So when the number first came out, which he first proposed, a 70% top marginal tax rate, everybody on the right just lost their mind. Grover Norquist, completely lost it. Called it a return to slavery or something. I don't know the exact quote. I don't want to misquote him, but, you know, he's still an idiot either way. But the idea is that, you know, we don't understand what a marginal tax rate is. You know, she proposed that for incomes over $10 million, which means you're not taxed at that rate until you've already made $10 million. At $10 million and $1, all right, is when that tax kicks in.
Yep.
And not until that point. So it's not like if you make $10 million, the government's going to take seven of it. It's just not, it's not how any of this works. But again, trying to explain, but the thing that really bugs me about that is even some of our leaders don't get this. Steve Scalise came out and made the same mistake, didn't understand what a marginal tax rate was, and started tweeting about how, you know, the left wants to take 70% of your pay if you make $40,000-$50,000 a year. It's just crazy time.
Yeah, but
their responses to this kind of stuff.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I know Steve Scalise knows. He's just feeding the idiot base.
Right.
That's just continuing to stoke the fire. And look, you know, I said to someone the other day that I would love to pay a 70% tax rate, the way that Cortez laid it out, because I would love to make $10 million a year. I'd be as happy to pay that 70%, because even that, yeah, you know, that million over 10, I'd still get, you know, $300,000.
Right. I mean, file that under problems I'd like to have. You know, I mean, I would have no problem with that whatsoever. I hope to live in a world where I have to worry about that one day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then again, you know, when you've got a young, smart, energetic woman in Congress who, you know, who says what she thinks and doesn't care what you think about her, this is someone who must be destroyed. So, of course, the right has to kind of collectively lose their minds all at once.
Oh, absolutely. Because here's the thing. I mean, I've been talking about this, like I said, for all the 14 years I've been doing this, and I knew people beforehand who were talking about a return to the, you know, the tax system of the 50s and 60s. And, you know, it never got this kind of traction. Just one almost throwaway comment during an interview, you know, sent the right into a flying tizzy.
Right. But we're talking about it.
Yep.
You know, people are talking about it. We're debating it. The idea of a top marginal tax rate is now something people are starting to learn what it is we're actually talking about. So, again, this is why it's good. Even if you don't agree with that, you know, maybe I don't think that that's, or maybe it should be after 20 million. Maybe it should be after 1 million. Maybe it should be after whatever number you choose. At least we're having the debate. And that is why it's great to have people come around, especially, you know, smart young people who are here to push us a little bit left or push us a little bit right or whatever the case may be. As long as they're doing it responsibly, we're doing it within the realm of public debate, and we're raising the level of debate in the country, the only possible, you know, end result is something good.
No, I'm with you. And look, I've had a bunch of conversations around this, because this is one of those things that I've spent a lot of time on. Because you go back to that, you know, that Eisenhower tax code, there were numerous tax brackets. You know, every $2,000 actually. So as you made a little bit more, your tax rate went up just a little bit more, so that, you know, we didn't want mass accumulations of wealth. I mean, we've created the largest billionaire class in the history of civilization, and we've done it through, well, lower wages, less health care, less retirement security, and infrastructure of our country that's crumbling, and, you know, social problems out the wazoo. But at least we have a large billionaire class.
Right. And we've basically done it doing two things. One, cutting taxes, and two, immiserating the working class. And as long as you're okay with both of those two things, and then life's going pretty good for you right now. But if you happen to be part of that group, you know, which most of us are, then things aren't going so well. And, you know, I think that anything that pushes income inequality, you know, back a little more towards the realm of the sane is a good thing. There's probably a number of different ways to do it. I mean, when we had these top marginal tax rates in the past, there were a number of loopholes. If you were willing to do certain things, usually, you know, community-oriented kind of things, if you're willing to spend your money in certain ways,
yep.
There were a lot of breaks out there to be had if you were out there using your wealth in significant ways, in ways that were helpful for all people.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a bad idea either.
Nope. I've said it all the time. I'm a big fan of loopholes. I'm a big fan of incentivizing certain behavior and punishing others. Look, do we want a green economy? Do we want to put solar panels on our homes and on our businesses? Do we want to, you know, move in a different direction? Yeah. So I'm going to say, okay, billionaire, you spend money doing some of that stuff. We'll cut you a break on it, much like we did back then when we built universities and schools and hospitals and all right. kinds of things that, you know, they put slapped their name on. It was good for the people.
Right. And keep in mind, most of that infrastructure that we built during that time, and, you know, it was probably the most, the greatest time for our economy in terms of building our own infrastructure. Yeah. We're still living on that infrastructure now. We're still patching it together. I saw something the other day. It was kind of funny that, you know, it doesn't really matter how many, you know, how many illegal folks get across the border. They're not getting across any of our bridges, you know. And so, you know, and that's kind of where we are now. We're using the same infrastructure, same highway system, same electrical grid, all of that we built back then. And we're just kind of hoping that we can keep it going for another few years, because we don't ever seem to want to do any real work to make it any better. Unless we get a massive recession that requires us to do a boatload of deficit spending, then maybe we'll do some infrastructure work. But I'd rather do it in times that aren't in crisis. You know,
I'm with you, but aren't we deficit spending now? Isn't that what that tax that
yeah,
tax
we're just not getting anything for it. So if the next recession comes, and a lot of people are saying it will, that money that we would have normally spent to get us out of that recession has already been spent. There's nothing there.
Yeah.
We're about to run a $1 trillion deficit in a good economy. So if that economy takes a turn in the wrong direction, there's no safety net. We are working without a net right now. So the next recession, if it comes, is going to be deep and it's going to be long and it's going to hurt bad.
Scary, scary stuff. Let me ask you last line of questioning. Michael Cohen announced that he's going to gonna sit down for a congressional hearing. I think it's a stupid idea. I'm curious your thoughts.
Well, I think that what we'll probably get, again, it's really hard to tell with Michael Cohen because he said so many things that weren't true. And he said it for so long, but he sure does look like a guy who's looking for absolution. I think that we may get the truth out of him, and we may get, we may get some testimony that's really gonna shock us. At least it's gonna shock some of us. There's a lot of us out there kind of been putting the pieces together on what happened and how it happened, been paying attention to the news and things like that. But to that crowd out there that has just been denied, I think this is the first time that a real insider is gonna step up and say, hey, we did it, you know, and I think that's going to be something that's going to be really hard for these folks to keep their head in the sand about.
No, I'm glad he is. I'm going to watch. I've already, you know, reserved the spot on the couch and the big bowl of popcorn. I'm going to watch. I just think I don't see really an upside for him because, look, the Republicans are going to be gunning for him, you know, and yeah, I don't know. I just I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't necessarily get it either. I mean, why he would necessarily do it. I mean, it's not like any time is coming off his sentence. Unless there's something else coming down the pipe that he's trying to head off, you know, which, you know, I don't know what that might be. Or maybe, you know, he's looking for some consideration when the state charges start coming out or whatever the case may be. I don't know exactly what there is in it for him. But, you know, if he wants to step up and talk, I'll certainly listen.
I know I'm going to listen. I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, this whole ride, crazy train.
That's
just,
right.
Just that simple. Brett, I appreciate you taking some time, sharing some thoughts. Always great talking with you, man.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Look forward to talking to you again real soon. Our good friend Brett Pransky. And look, you know, like I said, I don't know why Cohen would jump into the middle of it, but I'm going to watch. That simple. Let's take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people.
Own 90% of the wealth. 10% of the people. Own 90% of the wealth. Where do you fit in? Take a look at yourself. 10% of the people. Own 90% of the wealth.
hear smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 18. 18-